It's Friday, March 13th, 2009, and it's got to be 420 somewhere in the world. I'm your host, Radical Russ Belville. Produced and distributed by the National Organization for the Reform of Marijuana Laws in Washington, D.C., this is your normal daily audio stash, the growing truth about cannabis. Welcome to the most popular podcast regarding marijuana in all of America and all the world, featuring interviews with scientists, politicians, doctors, prohibition policy activists, regular cannabis consumers, musicians, and Normal's staff and Normal's board of directors, along with music and comedy no other podcast can offer. You can always find out more about our show at our website, stash.normal.org, and continue the education and conversation on our blog as well. We're ending marijuana prohibition with education, one listener at a time. The podcasting and blogging technology for the Normal Daily Audio Stash is provided by Red Aphid Interactive Media. For your professional web design needs, visit redaphid.com. Good day, Stashers, and welcome to the podcast. We begin today with some unfortunate bad luck Friday the 13th news. The medical marijuana bill, the Senate file in Iowa, has been tabled. It is dead for this legislative session, so no medical marijuana this year for Iowa. But we've still got our eye on Minnesota, Illinois, Alabama, New Jersey, New Hampshire. There's plenty of places where we still have alerts for new marijuana legislation, be that medical marijuana or some measure of decriminalization. Check out our activist alerts by going to stash.normal.org. Click on the United States map. All those states that are glowing in red have some sort of measure that you could get involved with. You'll find links from us to help you get in contact with your elected officials to tell them to support these measures. Another note for the stash as well, I receive letters all the time here at Normal from various cannabis consumers telling me their stories of adult marijuana prohibition. Very sad one that I received from a former Marine talking about his need for medical marijuana and how he lost a friend who probably would be alive today if marijuana were legal. These stories just break my heart, but please keep sending them because they are such motivation for us all to understand that we need to fight this adult marijuana prohibition and that there's real victims out there. So those of you who are like me, who've never had an experience with the police or never gotten in trouble with marijuana, you need to hear these stories. You need to know these stories to understand why we're fighting so hard for this. So check out the Stash blog, One Marine's Letter. Also want to let you know, on the television, I will be on the Paul Stanford Cannabis Common Sense Show tonight, Friday night at 8 p.m. Pacific Time. You can catch it live on ustream.tv. That's the letter U, STREAM.tv. Tonight, I'm going to be showing a 10-minute video from our Oregon Medical Marijuana Cardholders meeting. So if you'd like to kind of see what's going on here in Oregon and what we're doing with Oregon Normal, tune in to that Cannabis Common Sense Show tonight. And on a personal note, today, Friday the 13th, 2009, marks the 10-year anniversary of the first day I met my wife at my cousin's wedding. 10 years ago, that's right. It's been an amazing ride, and if you could have told her that this long-haired, hippie, rock, pot-smoking musician would have turned out to be the national voice for Normal, I don't think she would have believed you. It's been an amazing ride. Thank you, honey. I love you very much. All right, coming up on today's Daily Audio Stash, we've got your hemp headlines with some fantastic news about a new appointment to the Obama administration. In our interview segment, we've got our Celeb Stoner Entertainment Report with Steve Bloom. In our Daily Toker Tunes brought to you by MarijuanaMusicAwards.com, it's a Rap Friday, so we got some great rap for you. And in our second interview segment, the aforementioned Paul Stanford joins me to talk about a case he's testifying in Washington State. This is in Kitsap County, Kitsap County versus Olson, where two medical marijuana patients are being maliciously prosecuted, even though they fell well under the state guidelines for medical marijuana. We'll talk to Paul about that at the end of the show, and Paul will also be talking about it on the Cannabis Common Sense show that I mentioned earlier. It's been another exciting week of marijuana law reform, and there's plenty more weeks to come. We are riding the wave of change and hanging 10 on the surfboard of reform. It's time for your Normal Daily Audio Stash.
Hello, I'm Paul Stanford from the Hemp and Cannabis Foundation, or THCF. Medical marijuana is legal in 13 states today, and THCF has clinics in 8 of those states. Our doctors help qualified patients obtain an authorization for medical marijuana in their state. Patients are eligible for medical marijuana with a history of either severe chronic pain and or nausea, cancer, AIDS or HIV, hepatitis, glaucoma, seizure disorders like epilepsy, chronic muscle spasms such as in multiple sclerosis or asthma, neurodegenerative diseases such as Alzheimer's, and gastrointestinal disorders like IBS or Crohn's disease. If you or someone you know has one of these conditions, our doctors will help you obtain a permit for medical marijuana. THCF Medical Clinics has offices in Washington State, Oregon, California, Colorado, Hawaii, Nevada, Montana, and now Michigan. Call 1-800-723-0188 or go to the web at hemp.org or 1-800-723-0188.
Now it's time to take a look at the latest stories about marijuana from news organizations across America and around the world in our Normal Daily Audio Stash, Hemp Headlines. Van Jones named Obama's Green Energy Czar, from the Minnesota Independent. Van Jones, who has made a name for himself as a leading advocate for a green economy as a solution to both environmental and social justice issues, was named on Tuesday as President Obama's choice to become Special Advisor for Green Jobs, Enterprise, and Innovation at the White House Council on Environmental Quality. Jones is the founder of Green for All and author of the best-selling The Green Collar Economy. He was profiled by Thomas Friedman for Hot, Flat, and Crowded, and partnered with Al Gore in 2008 on a project called Green for All Academy, which trains people to, quote, effectively advocate for a green economy, end quote. Jones wrote, quote, "My job will be to help shape the administration's energy and climate policy so the climate solutions produce jobs and justice for all Americans." Jones also dispelled rumors that he would be a green job czar handing out stimulus cash. Paul Armentano called me breathless as he had just pulled his car over on the freeway shoulder to contain his excitement. There was Michael Savage, and don't get me started on Michael Savage, on his radio show raving about this new green energy czar appointed by Barack Obama, how nobody knew who he was, but of course, Michael Savage knew who he was, and we were in for some terrible, terrible consequences from this pick. Well, the reason Paul was so excited is that new czar, Van Jones, spoke at the 2002 Normal National Conference just 2 hours after comedian Bill Maher delivered the keynote address. The panel was entitled State and Local Organizing, Future Leaders, and also featured Dominic Holden and Chris Crane. And on the issue of the drug war, based on many previous conversations, Paul tells me he gets it. He's written extensively on the need for prison reform, and in a piece on the Huffington Post, explained the disproportionately racist nature of the drug war. Some of the greatest disparities in the juvenile justice system's response to youth of color involve the number of youth arrested and prosecuted for drug offenses. While African American youth comprise 17% of the youth population, African American youth represent 27% of all drug violation arrests and comprise 48% of the youth detained for a drug offense. Contrary to popular assumption, at all three grade levels, African American youth have substantially lower rates of use of most licit and illicit drugs than do whites, according to the government's Monitoring the Future survey in 2004. According to the National Survey on Drug Use and Health, white youth report annual use of marijuana at a rate 46% higher than African American youth. However, African American youth are arrested for drug offenses at about twice the rate of whites, and African American youth represent nearly half of all the youth incarcerated for drug offenses in the juvenile justice system. I can't help but think that someone like Van Jones will bring the notion of industrial hemp to the table when discussions of those green energy jobs begin. Also, though his job wouldn't involve drug or prison reform, knowing someone with a strong background in those areas has the president's ear feels very positive indeed. Besides, it's cool to have our second normal speaker, after Peter Bourne in the 70s, working in the executive branch. Let's hope this turns out better than Bourne's stint in the 70s turned out. President Obama answers marijuana decriminalization question during U.S.-Mexico border safety press conference. Reporter: You named a new drug czar today. You've taken that position out of the cabinet. You, in the past, have talked about decriminalization of marijuana. Are we still engaged in a war on drugs? President: I think what gave me pause on that question was I think you... I'm not sure it's accurate to say that I... Well, the implication was somehow that I think we should weaken our drug laws. That's never been my position. I think that what we do have to... I think the approach that we do need to take is to make sure that we have a both-and approach as opposed to an either-or approach. I think traditionally the debate is either interdiction, criminalization, longer prison sentences for not only dealers but users, that's one approach, and then the other approach would be sort of a public health decriminalization approach. My attitude is we do have to treat this as a public health problem, and we have to have significant law enforcement. And you know, if we can reduce demand, obviously that allows us to focus more effectively where interdiction is needed, where we've got to go after serious drug dealers and narco trafficking. Right now, I think that we're fighting with one hand tied behind our back because our effort to lower demand is grossly underfunded, not as effective as it needs to be. The average person who is seeking serious substance abuse treatment in a big city like Dallas or Chicago typically has a 3, 4, or 6 month waiting list to get enrolled in the program. I think that's a problem, and most law enforcement officials, I think, would agree that it's a problem. A president calling for more of a public health approach is a fantastic start. Recognizing the paucity of substance abuse treatment options for addicts is a huge moment. The president even seems to understand that this isn't so much a drugs and crime issue as it is a supply and demand issue. But the president just can't cross that line to recognize that eliminating all of the demand is never going to happen. And he certainly can't cross further over the line by recognizing that demand for marijuana isn't a demand that needs to be eliminated. It's a demand that needs to be recognized and exploited. Everybody wants to reduce alcohol abuse and dependence, but nobody ever suggests we need the federal government to act to reduce social drinking. It is accepted that most adults can responsibly use alcohol, and all our government tries to do is reduce alcohol's abuse, not its use. Sociologically, we could argue that we actually encourage increasing the demand for responsible use of alcohol, if the omnipresent beer ads on television are any indicator. Even our state governments are encouraging increasing demand for alcohol by ending Sunday sales and other restrictions. So when will someone in Washington recognize this same reality about marijuana? Marijuana can be abused, but the vast majority use marijuana more responsibly and in a manner less socially detrimental than the social use of alcohol. Marijuana doesn't lead to harder drugs, it doesn't cause overdose, and it leaves its users in a much more predictable, stable, and passive state than alcohol. Until the only cars I see parked outside of bars are taxi cabs, you cannot convince me that marijuana is too dangerous to legalize. Drug tests for the unemployed proposed in Florida. A state lawmaker is proposing a bill to drug test unemployed Floridians collecting unemployment benefits. Bill sponsor Senator Mike Bennett, a Republican from Sarasota, said, quote, "Let's make sure it's going to people who truly are ready, able, and willing to work. People who can't pass a random drug test really probably shouldn't be collecting our unemployment money," end quote. Last month, the state of Florida paid out $117 million in unemployment benefits. Bennett's bill calls for 10% of those who file an unemployment claim to undergo random testing. Also, 10% of people already receiving unemployment benefits would be tested. Leaving the unemployment office, Dorothy Odie explained how these days the unemployed includes the hardworking and people who've worked their whole lives. quote, these people that's coming here, they're working people that have been on their jobs. One man I met today, he'd been on his job 30 years. So you're labeling people, end quote. But Bennett insists that's not the case. Quote, whether soft drugs or hard drugs, get clean first so the next person who hires you will not have the liability of having you on the payroll, end quote. The proposal says anyone who failed their drug test couldn't get unemployment benefits for 1 year. The bill still has to go to legislative committee. The cost of each drug test would come out of the individual benefits. So you're going to take money out of people's unemployment benefits to drug test them, and if they fail, deny them benefits for a year. I see. In an economy where all the spending is frozen up, you want to see to it that people who are out of work have even less money to spend. In an economy where houses are being foreclosed on at record rates, you want to have more homeless people. Unemployment benefits are not a privilege, and they are not your money, Senator. When you work, you are paying money into an insurance pool that repays you if you are unemployed. And remember, you can't get these unemployment benefits if you are fired for cause, like if you were fired for failing a drug test at work, for instance. People on unemployment trying to find new work often face the hurdle of passing a drug test anyway. To have built up the time to qualify for unemployment, you may have already passed pre-employment and random testing on your job in the past. Being laid off and collecting a benefit you've worked hard and paid into for all your life is not probable cause to believe you're committing drug crimes. Being unemployed does not give the state the right to violate your privacy. If the concern is that unemployment benefits are being used to support drug habits, I don't know, create new unemployment bucks like food stamps. And they can't be used to buy liquor either. I mean, surely pounding the 40 ounce isn't a liability of having you on the payroll any business wants when hiring you, right? While you're at it, how about reducing people's unemployment benefits 50% if they're a cigarette smoker? Healthcare costs for smokers are a huge business liability, right? Why is it always picking on the marijuana smokers? Grand Valley State University student shot during raid. Allendale Township, Michigan. Friends of Derek Kopp cannot comprehend how he would pose a threat during a police raid of his Campus View apartment late Wednesday, or why a deputy shot and wounded the unarmed Derek Kopp. Laura Quist, a 19-year-old Grand Valley State University sophomore who lives in an opposite hallway from Kopp, said, quote, nobody wants to think those in the criminal justice system are shooting unarmed college students, end quote. Friends described Kopp as an easygoing, guitar-playing young man. Students today continue to question what happened after five officers with the West Michigan Enforcement Team, a regional drug unit, executed a drug-related search warrant on Kopp's apartment. Kopp, a film and video major, was shot in the upper right chest area with a Glock handgun after police came through a back glass sliding door. We've all read about these kind of things, but these next two quotes are the ones that I find most remarkable. Police on Thursday said there was no confrontation and did not think Kopp was trying to flee, but did not divulge details about what led to the shooting. State Police Lieutenant Cam Hankey would not disclose whether police found drugs in Kopp's apartment or what kind of drug they were seeking. No confrontation, no flight risk, no pounds of pot to show the community that this act of law enforcement violence was worth it. Then why did they shoot a 20-year-old film student? You never hear cops admitting up front that there was no imminent threat to the officer. So I suppose this was your garden variety cop just shooting citizens to clear and check his weapon? These are the real victims of the drug war. Cop could have smoked marijuana all his life and it would never have affected him as adversely as one cop with a hair trigger. As many of our fellow smokers toke quietly in their homes expecting the same quiet night that they have enjoyed for years, there are police poorly planning another raid that will result in one of us being maimed or dying. Keep that in mind when you hesitate to send that email to your representative or senator because you think that you'll never bear the same cost that Derek Kopp paid today.
I'm a doctor.
I'm a lawyer.
I'm a journalist.
I'm a student.
I'm a teacher.
I'm a representative.
I have cancer.
The outdated laws of prohibition are more dangerous than the plant itself.
I lost my scholarship.
I was fired.
20 million arrests since 1965. This is getting ridiculous.
Our prisons are overcrowded with nonviolent offenders.
We have the opportunity to change.
This is costing our country billions of dollars.
Making my family and I fight in a courtroom is difficult enough when I'm already fighting through chemotherapy.
There's no reason to be scared by tradition anymore.
We can stop this.
We can stop this.
We are the American people.
We can stop this.
And you have our support.
We are old.
Young.
Straight.
Gay.
We're every race and nationality.
And we're not going to give up.
You can tax it.
You can regulate it.
Apply age restrictions.
You can create millions of new jobs.
We can save our economy.
President Obama?
It's time for legalization.
Legalization?
Yes.
We
can.
This has been a public service.
Everyone move. When it gets to start nice.
Marijuana culture is infused throughout America and the world. As we round out the week, we take a look at the 420 phenomenon in movies, TV, music, and sports with former High Times editor and author of Pot Culture, Steve Bloom, in our CelebStoner.com entertainment news. All right, we've come to the end of the week, and just when you thought the story had died, it has resurfaced this morning on the Today Show. That's right, Michael Phelps and Matt Lauer in a big interview, and here to talk about it and other stories from the celebrity entertainment news this week in cannabis is Steve Bloom from CelebStoner.com. Welcome back, Steve.
Hey, Russ. Yeah, I'm back, and so is Michael Phelps.
It's like a zombie movie, man. We can't get rid of him.
Well, you know, in a way, you don't want to get rid of him, but unless if he starts saying something a little more positive, then maybe he should just kind of go away because it's kind of getting annoying.
Yeah, I thought so. I really had a problem with it. It really seems like, you know, language-wise, he does everything he can to avoid saying pot, that, you know, to what actually happened.
Yeah, he was on interviewed. It's sort of his first official interview post the you know, the bong hit heard seen around the world. And he was interviewed by Matt Lauer on the Today Show this morning, Friday morning, and you know, sat there at a poolside chat. And, you know, Lauer's sort of known for sort of doing softball interviews. So you didn't expect him to go too hard, but he did ask some good questions. And he tried to push him on, you know, whether they tried to get do something to prevent the photo from ever being released. And he basically said, I don't really know what you're talking about.
Mm-hmm.
But then he finally kind of asked the basic question, were you smoking pot? And Phelps' answer was, it was a bad mistake. And he goes, we all know what you and I are talking about. It was a stupid mistake, bad judgment. It's kind of like this loop. You know, it feels like Phelps is, you know, used to being trained by coaches. They tell him kind of this is what you need to do to win, to succeed, to be better. And he's sort of probably learning just being trained by his representatives now to, you know, what you should be saying. And so he's not really going off the script.
Yeah.
And you were kind of hoping maybe this morning he would, where he just would kind of make a little bit of break and say, listen, you know, I smoked a little pot, so what? But you're not going to get that from him because he's got too much still riding on it, and I guess he really doesn't want to rock the boat any more than he already has, you know. So, you know, he's sticking by his line, which was it was a mistake, and probably the, you know, the worst thing he probably said this morning was that he wants to, he feels it's his duty to try and help other people not make this mistake. You know, it's like, what's he going to do? Go around, you know, telling people don't do bong hits? Don't get caught with people photographing you doing bong hits? Or what is the mistake?
Exactly.
The mistake is getting caught, or the mistake is actually smoking marijuana. And it kind of, you know, leads you to wonder, you know, whether, you know, he says that's his always only time. He only makes mistakes one time. So he was asked the question about his DUI as well as, you know, his marijuana kind of situation, you know, is the bong hit, and he said, you know, is it again mistakes? But he says I never make the same mistake twice. Ooh.
Ooh.
So, you know, oh, so he hasn't done a bong hit since then, presumably.
Yeah.
Or he never did one before that. That was the first time.
Mm-hmm.
So the mistake is getting caught, not the mistake of doing something. And so, you know, wrong. But you know, it just it would be nice to just have him just kind of veer off a little bit. And, you know, I guess he's not going to do it. Not for today. You know, maybe, you know, if we catch, you know, maybe, you know, maybe he'll connect to my Twitter account and I can get him one day and he'll comment or something. You know, who knows? Maybe he'll be more off the cuff the way he was seen smoking. But, you know, get him in a vulnerable moment. I guess he's going to be so guarded now.
Yeah.
He's never going to kind of let anybody get close again.
Yeah. The line of his that I really liked was when he says, "I know I can't do anything wrong once I'm in the pool." And my response
to that is,
yeah, because the lighter won't work.
But I think one of the probably most interesting comments was his, "We were celebrating, honestly. It was a small group and we were sitting around celebrating."
Yeah.
You know, they were playing beer pong for $2,000 a game. They were getting drunk on their butts.
Yeah.
You know, they were smoking, you know, probably big quantities of pot in a really super cool bong. So, you know, he wants to really low-key. Oh, just a bunch of us. They're supposedly, according to the reports that I read, there were 50 more people at that house. He's saying, it was six or seven of us. It was very close company. No, if it was close company, nobody would have taken that shot without him knowing it.
Right.
There was a crowd, and he didn't notice that everybody was around, you know, watching.
Yeah.
You know, he thought, we're all friends here. And then, boom, photo, and boom, next thing you know, sort of in trouble. And so, you would hope that he would, he would flip the script, but he hasn't yet.
Yeah.
Maybe he will down the road.
Well, pardon the pun, but it sounds a little fishy to me. Now let's go on to some of the entertainment news. We've got the star of Scrubs being caught in a photo. This is a pretty new development.
Yeah, Zach Braff. This week here in New York, he was photographed smoking a joint. Looks like kind of down to the roach. He was sitting with a very lovely lady. Her name is Esty Ginsberg. She's one of the Sports Illustrated swimsuit models. She's an Israeli model. And I've heard before about Zach. There's been rumors about him over the years. You know how people just kind of tell you things and you should try and get an interview with so-and-so, and, you know, sometimes yes, sometimes no, they're available, they're not. I remember, because I kind of been hinting around, I kind of tied into his MySpace page a few years ago and tried to elicit a response from him. Of course, nothing. But there he was. It's funny, his eyes are kind of closed. He's got the lighter in his hand. He's got the hold of what looks like a joint, whereas the woman to his right, Esty, she's smoking a cigarette pretty clearly. He seems like he's having a good time. He's at this club called The Greenhouse in New York. It's a kind of a new place. It's billed as an eco-friendly nightclub that's made out of recycled and recyclable materials. So they were recycling some marijuana there that night. And so that's basically it. Not much has been made of it. It's just another person that sort of is now kind of publicly on record for smoking marijuana. You know, whether Zach Braff will comment on it or whether he'll do anything a little bit more like, join normal. be the keynote speaker at the next conference,
That'd be nice. Now, you've also got a bunch of guest bloggers up there at Celeb Stoner, and one of them is our Stash founder, Chris Goldstein, who posted a great little piece on the science fiction show, the very popular science fiction show, Battlestar Galactica, and its treatment of what could be interpreted as medical marijuana. Tell our listeners a little bit about that.
Well, Chris tipped me off to this. It's a little piece that we ran this week called Safe Access on Battlestar Galactica. And the head of the ship, Admiral Adama, and the president, Laura Roslin, now these are the characters played by Mary McDonnell and Edward James Olmos. And Edward James Olmos also, this particular episode he directed. And by the way, the episode was titled Episode 420. I do not know if that's the 420th episode. I doubt it. Islanded in the Stream of Stars, and President Roslin is dying of she has sort of what appears to be like a cancer type disease. She has no hair, and she was lying in kind of a hospital bed in the sick bay there, and she just kind of is sitting there just having a casual conversation with the Admiral, and they're old time friends and lovers, and she just kind of very casually pulls out a blunt and starts smoking it, and they pass it back and forth several times. Not very much is made of it. Chris did a little digging and went to the Battlestar Wiki website and found that this substance is called New Caprican Leaf, and it's a mildly psychotropic plant. So the stuff grows, wild on New Caprica. The leaves are used recreational as well as medically as the so pretty much, there, it's a fun scene, you just watch that as she sits there, although, she's, not doing well, but, it's I guess it was just a metaphor for medical marijuana on this show where, instead of it being a joint a bong or something like that. It was something that was a little more camouflaged, and maybe you could question exactly what is it, although, you know, all of us who are familiar with blunts know pretty much, you know, it's probably filled with marijuana or some type of psychotropic substance. And, you know, she's getting relief, you know. She's, you know, she needs that at this point in her life. And so, as Chris wrote, they smoke a blunt and relax. They engage in deep conversation, and most importantly, they have a laugh. So, you know, it's sort of like bad times there, you know, the marijuana sort of comes to the rescue.
Yeah, and I like this portrayal, and I've seen this in a couple of other shows in the past where marijuana is brought up in a scene, but it's not the subject of the scene. And people just treat it casually, and it's not, you know, even mentioned other than you seeing it. And I think that's one of the best portrayals we can get to normalize the use of marijuana.
Well, yeah, just like the passing of a joint in a lot of movies. Oftentimes, there's not really much to it. You know, it's just there. And it's not really, you know, it's there because it's just part of the script. It's something that the characters do. And the same thing happened here. The last time I recall medical marijuana making an appearance on a TV show was a while ago on General Hospital, which was kind of an odd place for that to happen, but one of the main characters was suffering from cancer, and that was made into a bigger deal because she had kind of a goofy younger friend who was kind of the stoner dude who was basically saying, hey, you should smoke some pot because it'll help you, and it became a big issue because she was a lawyer, and blah, blah, blah. All these kinds of things came up. So it became, you know, a focus of two episodes, whereas here, you know, I don't know if they're going to focus on it again, but, you know, but they obviously, you know, did it with a wink and a nod, you know, episode 420.
Yeah, absolutely. Now, before we wrap things up here today, Steve, anything else you need to tell our listeners about or promote for the weekend?
Well, you know, there isn't anything particularly interesting. I mean, I would say that the movie Miss March that's opening today, which is getting kind of pretty poor reviews, it's a really kind of wild comedy, and you may or may not like it depending on your sense of humor. There is a big marijuana scene on the party bus, so anybody who's looking for a movie this weekend might want to see something that's a little stoner friendly. Also, Sundays has really turned into a great day to watch television at Sunday night. I really think it's rivaling, you know, was perceived Thursday night's perceived to be the best night on TV, and there's so many good shows, and, you know, it's kind of a lot of new shows knocking on the door. The second season of Flight of the Conchords, the second season of Breaking Bad, which is Weeds on Speed, one of my new favorite shows called The College Humor Show, this other show called Eastbound and Down with Danny McBride, who was in Pineapple Express. It was really a crazy show. He's a, I don't know if you've seen it yet, but he plays a former baseball pitcher, major league baseball pitcher, who's sort of kind of in the dumps and trying to make his way back.
Yeah, I've seen the previews.
Have you seen it?
I've seen the previews for it. Yeah, it looks good.
He's just a wild man, and he kind of, you know, anything goes with him. He, you know, gets into a lot of trouble by just speaking his mind about everything. He's, you know, kind of a politically incorrect guy, but it's very funny. It's just sort of an amusing show, and it kind of pushes the boundaries a little bit on TV. So Sunday night's a good night, so, you know, recommend, you know, sticking around. And this is not so much with some of the more well-known shows that usually appear on Sunday, like Entourage or Curb Your Enthusiasm, stuff like that. It's more like up-and-coming. So I think there's a lot of good stuff out there. So, and I think it's all very stoner-friendly. It's kind of worth, you know, not sitting there, you know, doing a little recording and, you know, watching it later.
Yeah, it's a good time for stoner-friendly entertainment, that's for sure.
Definitely. Sit home, you know, until it gets a little warm. And, you know, welcome, you know, say hi to all my friends who are going out to South by Southwest. I usually attend, but this year I'm skipping it. The Austin Film and Music Festival opens this weekend. You know, there's a lot of great things going on down there. This weekend it's the film festival, and middle of next week it becomes the music festival. So you'll probably be reading a lot about that during the next few days. There'll be a lot of media coverage of that because that festival's turned into a big deal. I think it's now its 21st or 22nd year. And we have been, you know, covering the story of the son of the nominated drug czar, Gil Karlkowski. We have the mugshot up on the site, and it's, you know, it really hasn't been widely distributed around. So we kind of have the scoop on that story. It's an interesting story that we've been following. So I think that'll be interesting. Do you know when that is scheduled for hearing?
I haven't gotten the latest on that yet, no.
But coming up soon. So I think it's, you know, it's a very interesting story. Talking about, you know, life imitating art, in the sense that, you know, everybody sort of made this comparison to Karlkowski's son being similar to the daughter in Traffic, the movie, with Michael Douglas playing the nominated drug czar. Almost the same situation. You know, he gets nominated, And his daughter, meanwhile, is running around doing drugs like crazy, and he has to finally track her down, if people remember the movie. Great movie, of course.
Oh, yeah.
And here you have a similar situation where you have Bill Kerlikowske's kind of estranged son with a long rap sheet sitting currently in a jail in Florida on a probation violation. Two of the violations that he's on, one is a battery and two are marijuana charges. So here's the drug czar with the son who has a drug problem. Not so much marijuana being the problem, but getting arrested for it is the problem. And, so it's just something to sort of like think about a little bit, as we get a little closer to the possibility of Kerlikowske getting nominated or getting confirmed, the situation with his son.
Yeah, get it. If you haven't seen that movie, Traffic, get it out on DVD and see it, because it's a really, really great movie. And who knows, maybe we'll see some positive change from Kerlikowske.
I thought there was kind of an interesting comment, by the way, from Norm Stamper. Norm Stamper, I'm sure you've had on your show.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah.
Times. And Norm was the predecessor to Kerlikowske as the Seattle police chief. And his comment about Kerlikowske is, hopefully his stepson's drug arrests have helped him to realize that making drugs illegal does nothing to solve substance abuse problems and usually only makes them worse. So let's hope that Kerlikowske, if he does get, confirmed, will be pretty sensitive to these matters. I really think, I wonder whether this is going to, get in his way or block him in any way. I mean, so far it hasn't, but it just seems, it's highly ironic and, may come up quite a bit in the hearings that, if he can't deal with his son, how is he going to deal with, all the millions of drug users in this country?
Yeah. Well, Steve, thanks for joining us here every Friday here on the Celeb Stoner Entertainment Report for Daily Audio Stash.
Thanks a lot, Russ.
Just say no.
No matter what you call it, it's a huge part of popular culture.
Where'd you learn that, Cheech?
Drug school.
You don't need weed school. You just need a copy of the new book, Pot Culture, the A to Z Guide to Stoner Language and Life.
Hey, this is great, man.
Even if you never smoked marijuana.
I never used marijuana. Sorry.
Don't think you smoked marijuana.
I experimented with marijuana a time or two and didn't inhale.
Or you used to smoke marijuana.
I inhaled frequently. That was the point.
Pot Culture by former High Times editor Steve Bloom and Shirley Halperin will answer every question you ever had about marijuana culture.
Has that marijuana made it back up here yet?
Check out Pot Culture, the A to Z Guide to Stoner Language and Life at Amazon.com or visit potculturebook.com today.
Too bad, man. I just stopped smoking yesterday.
The battle to end adult marijuana prohibition can sometimes seem endlessly frustrating and impossible to overcome. One way we bond as a community and draw strength to continue is by rejuvenating our spirit through art and music. The Marijuana Music Awards exist to recognize those sonic artists in all genres of music who feature a ganja-friendly message to motivate and inspire all the cannabis community. Our Daily Toker Tunes, brought to you by MarijuanaMusicAwards.com, feature the finest in blues, rock, jazz, hip-hop, rap, reggae, country, bluegrass, and dance music to enhance that 420 feeling and refresh all you stashers for another day on the front lines of the drug war. Enjoy this cut from MarijuanaMusicAwards.com and visit our blog at stash.normal.org to learn how you can vote for your favorites and enter your Toker Tunes in the 2009 Marijuana Music Awards. Here's a smooth smoke song for you on It's a Wrap Friday, Tanqueray by the Green Riders. The group are from Florida and were nominees in 2008's Marijuana Music Awards with today's song. Green Riders have collaborated with dozens of artists to create their unique blend of rap music, hip-hop, and rhythm and blues. The group have recently completed their popular song, Fine As You Is, which you can check out on myspace.com/Green Riders Entertainment. And registered stashers can get an MP3 download of this tune. It's Tanqueray by Green Riders.
Give me that Tanqueray, and I'm okay. I can sit down and spit licks all day. We don't fall 'cause we've been through it all. When they call, we gon' be on the phone. Give me that.
no sleep, just some rain and y'all know what I mean. When I'm choking the cough and the smoke blows on, y'all know that I don't go.
This is the remix, watch us ride. We gon' get you bust tonight. If you like this shit before, here's some vising for your eyes. Riders riding dirty, got the haze in full effect. Crypto County got them bricks on deck. We leaning in the club, sipping tang and getting low. I got my hands spinning like a set of 20 bulls. Then Moso called me up, said the package on the way. 20 green bottles in a bag of Cali J. Gin and juice all day, man, we party all way. Man, this is how we do it down here where we stay. From the regs to the mids, from the drove to the perk. Got my chest full of smoke, get my hand up a skirt.
Give me that Tanqueray, and I'm okay. I can sit down and spit licks all day. We don't fall cause we've been through it all. When they call, we gon' be on the ball. Give me that crumble weed. No sticks, no seed. Just some green and y'all know what I mean. When I'm choking the cough and the smoke blows off, y'all know that I don't go.
You know we on them Cali trees, taking blunts to the dome like police brutality. But we ain't getting tased, we getting stoned like the biblical days. Give me that Tanqueray, I'll be faded like bread at the VMAs. But I would shoot my mistakes on Sarah Silverman's face. Then she could really make a joke in bad taste. Smoking fat J's and Mary Jane, taking hits to the brain till we feel like we was hit by a train. My whole clique is insane. Now we're nationwide, we'll take you on a ride with gangsters on the west side and show you the bay light. Day and night, we straight tight. So get your game right. Green days, green bottles, green riders, green gunners, get it right.
Tanqueray, and I'm okay. I can sit down and spit licks all day. We don't fall cause we've been through it all. When they call, we gon' be on the phone. Give me that crumble weed. No sticks, no seed. Just some green and y'all know what I mean. When I'm choking the cough and the smoke blows off, y'all know that I don't go.
Mr. Blacktop, Black Wolf Cartel representer. Iced up like the winter, bring me that gin when I'm enter. Me and Wick City gangster homeboy, Papa Top is no pretender. Tanqueray and ice, no juice, that's how them gangsters get slizzer. I wanna slur my words when I spit verb to these birds. Unheard words from the pimp that spits his verb is superb. Give me a mic, a stage, some herb, and I can really get curd. And let these haters really observe and learn, you dig?
Out here in the bay, we smoking perk on the bushes. Thought of AIDS in the face of Tanqueray and Buenas Noches. Sideshow stepping on the seats of hot ciders. Mr. King rolling with the green riders. Fitted nightly, looking icy. Red monkey jeans and a white tee from the beta and ballet. We getting hypey. Wifey wannabes are getting played. If I want to throw the green and we on a Tanqueray.
Tanqueray, and I'm okay. I can sit down and spit licks all day. We don't fall cause we've been through it all. When they call, we gon' be on the ball. Give me that crumble weed. No sticks, no seed. Just some green and y'all know what I mean. When I'm choking the cough and the smoke blows off, y'all know that I don't go soft.
I'm Alan St. Pierre, Executive Director of Normal. Have you heard about the new super pot that's supposedly 20 times more potent than your father's Woodstock weed? Don't believe the hype. Marijuana's THC potency has always varied, even in the 60s and 70s. And the drug czar's numbers are full of, well, exaggerations. While no intoxicant is harmless, cannabis is non-toxic and far safer than alcohol. No matter how much you smoke, of whatever potency, you cannot die of a marijuana overdose. Potency is irrelevant anyway. More potent pot just means you smoke less of it, meaning less harmful smoke in your lungs. This is a prime example of harm reduction in action. Besides, the government already allows the prescription of THC pills. Its commercial brand name is Marinol, and it's 100% potent. Meanwhile, the federal government won't allow dying people to use natural marijuana, no matter what the potency. Does this make sense to you? Learn the facts about pot. Visit norml.org today.
All this week, we've been covering a trial that's happening up in Washington State, Kitsap County, to be precise. It's Kitsap County versus Olson. And if you've been reading my posts on it at the Daily Audio Stash blog, you'll realize that there's some pretty crazy shenanigans going on there from the prosecution. Joining us here to talk about it is a man who's an expert witness in the trial, also the head of the Hemp and Cannabis Foundation and a sponsor of the Daily Audio Stash. Mr. Paul Stanford joins us. And Paul, welcome back to the show.
Thank you, Russ. Thanks for having me.
This Olson case
is a real travesty that people need to know that these kind of things are happening.
Well, let's fill them in on the basics of the case of the Olsons and what they're charged with and the situation of medical marijuana in Washington.
Well, the Olsons are charged with illegally growing marijuana, even though they had an authorization from our doctor and our clinic, and they were complying with the rules as they had been laid out to them. However, a local drug task force came into their home and arrested them for cultivating cannabis legally. And they charged them with doing it illegally. When they came in, they actually came in and poisoned three of their puppies.
Oh, my God.
And apparently this is a tactic that they use, that the WestNet drug task force uses in western Washington. They're in three counties, in Lewis County, which is where Tacoma is, and in Mason and Kitsap counties. And what they do is they poison the puppies, and then they tell them what they told Pam Olson, Bruce Olson's husband, was that if she wanted to treat the puppies who were in convulsions from being fed rat poison, that she had to testify against her husband, Bruce Olson. And that's a tactic they use in other cases as well. Apparently, if you have a dog, your dog will be poisoned if this task force comes to your house.
That's even worse than the tactic I've heard. You know, I covered that case of Shai Calvo, the mayor out there in Berwyn Heights, Maryland, where during the drug raid, they shot his dogs. You know, the first dog had approached, but the second dog ran away. They chased it down and shot it in the back. This is even worse than that.
Yeah. I mean, poisoning puppies. that just gives you an idea of the morality of the people we're dealing with.
Absolutely.
You know, a couple of years ago, I was in my office, and I had a detective from a Washington County. This detective, Russ Kennepaw from Lewis County, came to our office trying to barge into our doctor's office. I sideswiped him into our office, and I asked him, so you are willing to torture sick people and the sick and dying? And he said, whatever it takes. And I said, so you will torture sick people, whatever it takes. And you'll torture dying people. I'll do whatever it takes. That's what he just kept saying.
My God.
Like an automaton. that's unfortunately the mindset a lot of these narcotic officers have. I think they get the worst of the retired military people, and I don't know.
Hard to tell. Now, this case is currently, they're in the jury selection process, and the update that I posted yesterday was most remarkable about the jury selection process. Tell them what happened in this case.
Well, there's this Oregon activist that had a sign on an 8.5 by 11 piece of paper. It was a stop sign that said "Stop arresting medical marijuana patients."
That's the one we see at the like Americans for Safe Access rallies. Everybody's used that sign.
Exactly. Everybody's been using that for 10 years.
Yeah.
And he wasn't holding it up and displaying it. It was just held at his side in a stack of papers. But the prosecutor noticed it, and she also noted that it was on the front of another website for the Cannabis Defense Coalition, a group that's kind of sprang up in Seattle to help patients like Bruce Olson, kind of around the Olson case, in fact. And they've done some advertising in the main paper there in Port Orchard, Washington, the Kitsap Sun, about this case and the prosecutor's vendetta against medical marijuana patients. And so when the prosecutor in this case, Alexis Foster, saw that sign, she went to the judge and told the judge that the fact he held that in the courtroom, even though it was at his side and he wasn't displaying it, had tainted the entire jury. And the judge agreed and threw the jury out, setting the trial back about 3 days. And I think the prosecutor's real tactic was to, you know, make the spectators and others, as the doctor and myself who have to come in there and testify these things, come back again. It's been more and more of our time, you know, but she found that as an excuse. The trial started anew after, you know, 3 days. They had to call a new jury. I guess they just set the New Jerry this morning. It's Friday afternoon now, and they're moving forward. The prosecution's trying to present its case there.
You know, I guess I don't understand the point of the prosecution here trying to squelch any mention of medical marijuana. This isn't a federal trial. I know they squelch the mention of medical marijuana in federal trials. What's the reasoning behind this? Isn't this a state-level trial?
Yeah, it's a state-level trial. You know, I just don't understand it. I don't think that would have happened even in a federal trial. If someone had had that paperwork at their side, they might have been told to take it away. And I've been in federal trials when the judge ordered people to take their buttons off, you know, their political buttons. Mm-hmm. But I never seen them throw out a whole jury saying that it had tainted a whole jury.
And this,
I don't even think the jurors saw it.
Yeah, I was going to say, this was in the courtroom, though, where the sign was?
Actually, it was a fellow sitting in the hallway outside the courtroom.
So not even in the courtroom.
In the courtroom itself.
Not even in the courtroom. And what are they going to do if, you know, people decide to protest outside the courtroom and hold up that same sign? Is there going to be like a no free speech zone or something?
I think several people are planning on doing that next week. And hopefully we'll get more and more people. I think it'd be one of the best things if there were 40 or 50 people in front of the courthouse with a sign or a similar sign. But obviously the courtroom is a no free speech zone.
Yeah. Now, the prosecution, what are they alleging as far as the charges here? And would those charges, should this person be protected by Washington's law?
Well, they're definitely protected by Washington's law. You know, I had personally advised every patient not at that clinic not to grow more than 24 plants and have 24 ounces and not to bud more than 6 plants each. That was an advisory given to the patients in paper and in video. And so it was a husband and wife, Bruce and Pam Olson. They both had a permit, and so they grew 48 plants. Their plants were only about a foot tall. They had no usable medicine whatsoever. When the box of evidence was opened, it was a 16-by-16 cubic box, and there were about 2 inches of moldy leaves at the bottom of it. And that was it. So they're saying that this, you know, maybe 5 or 6 ounces of moldy leaves was more marijuana than they should have had.
Oh, my God.
It's just outrageous. They had no usable marijuana whatsoever. And they were well within the limits that I had told them to stay within.
This just sounds like such a frivolous prosecution.
Washington was very vague for a long time. Washington was the second state to implement, along with Oregon in 98, after California. Washington was one of the second state to implement the medical marijuana law. And when they did so, they established a very vague defining term of the limits. They said a patient could have a, quote, 60-day supply, end quote. Now, that's been very problematic for the vast majority of patients who had encounters with law enforcement. I have seen patients prosecuted for 1 and 2 plants, and I've had to go in and testify multiple times in several cases on behalf of patients who were growing, you know, small amounts. Then the police have held, you know, because they says you can have a 60-day supply, that means you can't have anything at all. And that's been a point they argued. And then last year, the health department came out at the behest of the legislature in Washington, came out with a new ruling. The ruling in Washington now is 15 plants and 24 ounces. But that just was implemented last July. This case is more than 2 years old.
Mm, okay. So then there's some of that gray area there still that they're having to deal with then.
Yeah. Well, they definitely were way under the 24-ounce limit with all the harvested molded leaf that they were able to gather. In the pictures they took the root ball and everything and said it was 19 pounds of marijuana. And the judge finally ruled that, you know, it wasn't 19 pounds. The prosecutor was trying to move forward with that so that she could say they had 19 pounds of marijuana, where in fact, you know, they were weighing the wet weight of the root ball and the stalk and the entire plant.
Yeah, all the non-usable parts.
Exactly.
Wow, this is an amazing case. We're gonna keep following it here at the Stash. It's just another example of this prosecutorial madness, especially in a state that recognizes the right to use medical marijuana. I'm sure there's plenty of other crimes and plenty of other things that Washington could be spending its money on.
Yeah, they're spending a lot of money, and this prosecutor seems to think that she has unlimited resources because just over this little sign, she threw out 3 days of work on behalf of Judge and a team of 20 people, not to mention the 60 potential witnesses, or jury members that were interviewed.
Paul, do you have any information for people that want to help out in this case, if they want to attend this case, where they should go or websites they could look stuff up on?
Sure. The best website right now that keeps an update on it is cdc.coop, or C-O-O-P. So that's CDC for the Cannabis Defense Coalition, .coop. And the trial is taking place in Port Orchard, right across from Bremerton, on the west side of the Puget Sound, across from Seattle. And it'll every day 9 to 5. Best time to be there is Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, and Thursday of this week.
Okay.
And if you want to stand outside the courtroom with a sign and make a public political statement, that's well within our rights as citizens and could be helpful for this case. At least teach the prosecutor and judge about the meaning of the First Amendment.
Yeah, somebody needs to be reading their Constitution, that's for sure. You mentioned this WestNet task force. Is this prosecutorial type of misconduct something that's more likely to be happening in that Western Peninsula area of Washington?
It certainly is. In fact, in two different cases recently, WestNet cases, the judge ruled that even though these two different patients had a recommendation not just from our clinic and our doctor, but also from a doctor from the University of Washington, Greg Carter.
Right.
They had a recommendation from our doctor, Dr. Thomas Orvald, a heart surgeon, retired heart surgeon, and a recommendation from Greg Carter. In both these cases, these two patients both had that, one in Mason County, one in Kitsap County. In both of those cases, the judge ruled that they didn't have a medical marijuana authorization, that the doctors were wrong in issuing it, and that the patient should be on morphine and OxyContin. And so they're appealing those cases, obviously. The judge didn't attend medical school, and neither one of these judges has. And so that just seems to be the nature of this WestNet puppy poisoning, colluding group of prosecutorial bandits.
Yeah, it's sad. It's sad when judges and cops think they're doctors.
Yeah, it is. It is. You know, they're practicing medicine. They say the people don't know what they're doing. The two doctors that recommended medical marijuana don't know what they're doing, but they know that
they know.
People should really be doped out on OxyContin.
Absolutely.
But if they get it illegally, God help them, they're going to prison.
Yeah, I'm sure this is something you'll be covering on your TV show. Tell our listeners how they can follow your show online and call in if they want to call in.
Sure. Well, we have a live weekly show, Cannabis Common Sense. It's on Pacific Coast time every Friday night at 9 p.m. Or actually 8 to 9 p.m. Pacific time, 8 to 9 p.m. And it's available online at Ustream, that's Ustream.tv. That's Ustream, Ustream.tv. And it's available on our website at hemp.org, hemp.org. You can watch it in both places.
Excellent. And I'll see you there tonight. I got some video for you, and it'll be a good show. We hope everyone tunes in.
Yeah.
Paul Stanford. Paul Stanford is the head of the Hemp and Cannabis Foundation in Portland, Oregon, the largest chain of medical marijuana clinics in the nation, I believe.
We're definitely in more states than any other set of clinics. We're in 8 states, and we're the only clinic offering services in more than one state.
Yeah, we'll say largest geographically. How's that?
Yeah.
Okay, thanks, Paul. We'll see you tonight.
Thanks. Bye-bye.
Thank you for downloading the Normal Daily Audio Stash, the growing truth about cannabis. We are produced by the National Organization for the Reform of Marijuana Laws in Washington, D.C. Our executive producer is Alan St. Pierre. Our deputy director is Paul Armentano. Our webmaster is Brian Judy. And web production is provided by Red Aphid Interactive Media. As always, you can catch up on the latest information about marijuana at www.norml.org. And you can interact and download from our Audio Stash blog at stash.normal.org.
For everyone here at Normal, I'm your host, Radical Russ Belville, hoping all your harvests are bountiful and your encounters with law enforcement are non-existent. We leave you today with another one of our cannabis quotes, this one from automaker Henry Ford from the early 20th century, who said, quote, "Why use up the forests, which were centuries in the making, and the mines, which required ages to lay down, if we can get the equivalent of forests and mineral products in the annual growth of the hemp fields?" End quote. Well, Henry, it's because nobody smokes trees and copper. Yes, it is ridiculous. We need to at least legalize industrial hemp. It's always amazing to me that the Drug Enforcement Administration is in charge of banning something that is not a drug. Thanks for downloading the podcast and helping to make the Daily Audio Stash the growing truth about cannabis in cyberspace. We've got 250,000 downloads every month and 100,000 reads on the Stash blog. Let's double that. Tell all your friends to surf to stash.normal.org. We'll be back next week with more news and interviews you can use for the cannabis community. And until next time, take care of each other, tokers.